Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Leadership from the Heart. Today, we're joined by Jim Carlo, a seasoned business strategist, a speaker, and author with over 30 years of leadership experience. Jim has successfully driven explosive growth with the healthcare organizations from both startup industries with leaders in the startup industries. He also specializes in building high-performing teams, revitalizing underperforming businesses, which is my jam, and leading transformational change. So let's get strapped in and let's get ready for an insightful conversation on leadership, strategy, and driving lasting success. Jim, welcome to the show and thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I am so excited to be here today. having listened to a number of your episodes, I can't find, or we are more aligned than I think I am with any other potential platform or host than I am with
what. Oh, that's so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. I am so glad you're here as well. So, Jim, I want to start with this idea that you challenge that leaders are not necessarily born, but rather they're developed. So what experience do you have in your own journey that led to that belief? And then I'll second phase that question depending on how you answer.
Okay. So I was not born with the genetic gene to be a proven leader, I believe. Now, there is some scientific evidence that leaders do have a common certain trait.
Sure.
Or gene. But I don't have any family history of anyone being in executive management or leadership. Most of my ancestors were tradespeople. My dad was a carpenter. Mm. His dad was a mason. My mom worked in a department store. Her mom died at an early age, but her dad worked at a lumber yard. And so none of them were supervisors, managers, or anything. Mm. And I look at my career and how I have evolved. And it certainly isn't, it is really the result of being led by leaders and managers who to this day I have great respect for and who helped develop kind of my framework and where I'm at today. And in my own leadership journey, I look back at the first time I was a manager and how horrible I was compared to the leader I am today. So to me, that is something that was developed and nurtured over a long period of time. So I can honestly say I wasn't born this way, but I had a lot of opportunity along the way to pick up tidbits to make me who I am today.
Right, right. No, I love that. And so how would you help others develop their leadership skills, knowing that you didn't have to be born one and you can develop? What are some of the things that you would say to them?
So the first thing I would say is don't be afraid. Most leaders are apprehensive, or people who want to be leaders are apprehensive about becoming a leader. Just know that it's a journey.
Yes.
And so I've created sort of a roadmap of what I see in the people that I mentor in what they've asked me over the last 25 years for help on. And a lot of it is not something you can pick up a textbook at a university and know. And so I sat down a year ago and started to put pen to paper and released a book in December called The Six Pillars of Effective Leadership, A Roadmap to Success. Mm-hmm. And in it, are six key characteristics that I think if anyone can develop and utilize, they will be an effective and a successful leader. There are many leadership books out there. Many of them are very, very good, and many of them focus on one or two different things. But I don't think I have seen one that really focuses on characteristics that one could develop or offer ways to develop those. And so that's what I set out to do, and that's sort of what I've been teaching and promoting over the last year and will continue to do so.
Yeah. Let's jump right into that. I would love to know, what are the six pillars of effective leadership?
So let's start with what I call the non-negotiable leadership trait, integrity. Mm-hmm. If you don't operate with consistent, straight down the middle of the highway integrity in everything that you do, you will not build trust within your team.
Yeah.
You will not build a following, and you will ultimately fail or be one of those leaders that ends up moving the chairs on the Titanic just to hide from those failures and just say, well, I changed these six managers out and, you know, we're hoping that they're going to get the job done. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
If you want to build a loyal and strong following, it really starts with integrity. And this came about when I was 23 years old. The year I graduated college, I ran for a public service role in the town I was raised in. I ran as a city councilman, and I was elected. And about 2 days after getting elected, the city manager asked me to spend a little time with him. And I did. This is the early 80s. This is a long time ago. And I, no cell phones, no thing. And I sat down, and he first told me a little bit of reality and said, please know that even though we're a tiny town, you're going to be approached with some things that you probably are going to second guess as to the legitimacy or legality of what you're being asked about or to do. And he said, you're a smart guy. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to give you one suggestion that I hope you take to heart. He said, when you go to bed at night, I want you to ask yourself one question. And he said, that question is, did I do anything today at the expense of another individual, organization, or group of people for my own self-benefit? He said, if you can answer no to that question, then you've done the right thing. Do you know, since 1983, I've been asking myself that question every night. And the answer has been no every night. And that's why I say this, the integrity pillar is non-negotiable. When you start to waver from that, it gets noticed.
Yeah.
And it's very hard when you lose the confidence of somebody else, or when you lose the trust of somebody else, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to regain that back.
Right. Right. Yeah. I cannot disagree with anything you just said. Integrity is the forefront of everything. So how do you, I know that you're a direct kind of leader, you look for results, but how do you balance this high performance and execution with maintaining strong relationships within your team? And more importantly, how do you coach people to do the same thing? Because not everybody, you know how you operate, so it's easy, but how do you coach others?
You know what's interesting? People become followers. Mm-hmm. And they when they experience something positive, they tend to take that same characteristic and use it for themselves, or help, or ask for help in how to use it. I often tell people to be themselves. You can't be someone else. So yeah. In my career, which has predominantly been on the sales side of organizations, I've often said to people, read as many sales books as you want, but don't implement a single book. Implement one idea from that book. because that book was written by a sales professional who was in a specific industry at a specific point in time, and evolution happens. And while that book may be a bestseller, it's a bestseller because of some commonality that people had with either the industry or the whatever. But if you try to implement the book, you probably will fail. Right. Which is why I don't tell people to try to implement my book, but because I'm not giving philosophy lessons, but rather practical application of I've had to help people and manage people and work with people, I think it's a type of book that can be implemented. And probably because I give real world examples of in my career, but also I can pinpoint for each of the pillars someone that is recognizable by name to any reader as a leader or as someone who's in leadership at a major corporation or government entity, but they didn't know that they led with that leadership trait. So, for example, from an integrity perspective, if you look at the CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, integrity is non-negotiable to him, sort of like it is to me. I've never met him, but I've read enough about him to know he stands on that pillar. It's funny, I was speaking at a university a few weeks ago, and we really got into this integrity one, and we had trouble getting off of it. And someone in the class, a student in the class, challenged me and said, so if integrity is that important, why isn't it the foundation of a statue versus a pillar with five other pillars? And I looked at that person and I said, you are absolutely right. I got it all wrong. I probably should have had a statue instead of six pillars. They're all important.
Yeah.
That integrity one becomes that base block of the statue that without that statue is going to topple over.
Right. That's a really good call out. Wow. That's beautiful. And so you mentioned mentorship and that you mentor people. And that's sort of, there's a difference between ally and mentorship. And I understand that. So who were your most influential mentors and what lessons did they teach you that still stick with you to this day? Sort of like the question that you ask yourself every night.
So, and that came from the city manager. And So his name was Don. And so he gets credit for that. I have worked with some very impressive leaders. I'll tell you another one. I worked for Perot Systems, which was founded by Ross Perot, mm-hmm. once a presidential candidate, the original founder of a company called EDS, Electronic Data Systems. Mm-hmm. And his leadership style, it was amazing to see how he operated. A couple of things about Mr. Perot that I will forever remember. He returned every phone call, whether he knew the person or not. Mm-hmm. He also gave back to anybody that he knew he could help, especially if they were former military people. As a military person himself, he had the capability of helping people, and he was very concerned about those people as well as his employees. And we had a policy at work, and this was a Mr. Perot policy. If you had an employee who themselves, their spouse, or their immediate family, meaning children, had a medical issue that was significantly impacting their life, you had to report it to his office, and you had to make sure that you were getting the best care for that person and their family. And if he thought that we could get them better care somewhere else in the U.S., he would, out of his own pocket, pay to ship them there. And I can tell you a story of a real story. I had a customer in to our corporate office. And one of the things about getting Mr. Perot to come have lunch with you is to serve barbecue. He loved Texas barbecue and he could smell it a mile away. So whenever I had a client in, I would always book the boardroom, which was right down the hall from his office, which he had to pass going back and forth to the restroom or to the cafeteria. And I knew if he smelled the barbecue, he would stop in, and he did. And he was bigger than life. For he was a short man, but bigger than life. And he was telling us that that morning he had gotten a call from a woman in Louisiana whose son was a disabled, Marine. And this is in the 2000 to 2005 timeframe. And that individual had a child who was just diagnosed with cancer, but the family was not on Medicaid and did not have health insurance. Mr. Perot arranged to have that child treated at MD Anderson in Houston, and he was going to fly the entire family down to Houston for that treatment. And he told us that story shortly after his admin came in and said, Mr. Perot, the governor of Louisiana is on the phone for you.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
And we all were like bewildered. And he said, well, have him hold. And so that made us all question. He's asking the governor to hold. What happened? So the admin leaves. And then he tells us the story that he's arranging to have this child cared for at his own expense. And he said, and the governor's calling me because I called him. He made me wait on the phone. And then I eventually had to leave a message. And my message was the following. I just want to let you know I'm doing your job and taking care of one of your residents at my expense. And I was amazed. But this happened daily with Mr. Perot. He would do this.
Right.
And he said, well, I think I'll go talk to the governor. So he gets up and leaves. And this customer of ours is like, he really does that stuff? And we're like, he does it for employees as well. And they were amazed.
Yeah.
About an hour later, he comes back into the meeting and he says, I just thought I should tell you how the story ends. He said, the governor called me to tell me that I didn't need to take care of the family and I didn't need to do his job. The child is now on Medicaid in Louisiana and is going to be admitted at a children's hospital in Baton Rouge to have his cancer taken care of by the state of Louisiana. And then he just laughed and said, see how it always works out?
Yeah.
And so to me, that attitude and that commitment to human life, there's a lesson in there.
Yeah.
There's a lesson in there for all of us.
Definitely. Definitely. So would you say that was like your biggest takeaway in of what you saw as a mentor? Maybe he didn't. You know, mentors are not just people who talk to you one-on-one, right? That you have meetings with. Mentors are people that you read about, that you can watch how they move. And so was he like the most influential?
He would be from a compassion and empathy perspective. And those are two very different things.
Yes, they are.
And I'll tell you, and sometimes they cross lines and you need both. And I have an example of that while working at Perot Systems.
Please.
I had a group of people that was that oversaw. We created systems that process claims for healthcare companies, and we had an old green screen technology. So, for your listeners that are as old as I am, they'll immediately remember green screen and the fact that you didn't have a mouse. And we were transitioning to Windows-based products, and so we were going to be sunsetting that platform. And I had to tell these people that we would be sunsetting the platform, but that I needed them because we still needed to support the customers until we could convert them. And I struggled with how can I get them to be committed to stay and trust that I have their back? And I thought long and hard, and I met with them as a group. And I can't remember if there was 20 people or 25 people, somewhere in the 20 to 30 range. And I promised them three things. I said, I promise I will tell you as soon as I know when your position would potentially go away based on a client's transition plan to a new platform, or whether they would be leaving us and going to another company for support. So that was promise number one. So I said, so sometimes you may get 6 months notice, sometimes you may get, you know, 5 weeks notice, but you'll always know as soon as I know. Commitment number two, if you would like to learn the new technologies that we're coding our programs in or our products in, I will make available to you that training during work hours while you're still doing your other job, but I'll give you time from that other job to learn that so that when your job is eliminated, you can transition over to this other area of the company and work on those new products. That was commitment number two. Commitment number three was, if you didn't want to work in that product area, but you wanted to stay with the company, and even if you wanted to leave the company, I would personally help you find another job. Here's what happened. For the next 2.5 years while this transition took place, not one person left before their job was eliminated. But here was the unexpected thing that happened. That entire team for that entire time frame had the highest employee satisfaction rating in the whole organization. I never expected that. But if you think about it, the empathy that I had for them and the commitment that I gave them, they gave me their commitment as well. And they all stayed. Yeah. They all stayed. And I think that was a good, now I've done a lot of things wrong in my career, which I've learned from, but that's one that definitely from an empathy perspective is definitely a heroism.
Yeah. And I would attribute that to so much more than just empathy, right? I mean, you made commitments, you were transparent, you were vulnerable. There's so many different traits within that one example of why they were able to trust you, right? Because you could have approached it totally different, which unfortunately, you know, most managers do, forgetting that they're people too, and they're just as afraid. And, you know, you can send someone into survival mode very quickly, and then you're going to wonder why their performance is lacking. Well, because they're scared, you know, they yeah, don't know when they're going to.
And that transparency is so important.
Absolutely.
You know, if you were to tell an organization today that we're going to have to cut 10% of our workforce and just leave it at that, but not tell them where you're going to cut, who will be impacted or whatever, you likely will lose more than 10% of your workforce because they're all going to be scared and think that they're going to be eliminated.
100%. And that's going on a lot right now, right? Like a lot of organizations are in this, you know, very conservative era where they don't know what's going to happen in the future with the economy. And so we're seeing a lot of stories of people being laid off. And you only can hope that they're being done in a very compassionate way. So what is the difference between, you said there's a difference between compassion and empathy. What is your difference? What is your definition?
So to me, empathy is putting yourself in their shoes and understanding what they're going through.
Okay.
Compassion is showing concern for someone and offering to help someone at their time of need. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a distinct difference between the two. And so I can be very compassionate about someone going through it. So, for example, a work employee who's got an ill parent, as an example, I can be compassionate to them. I don't know how they feel, but I can sense how they may feel. But by showing compassion for them and giving them the latitude to care for their family member in the time of need, or helping them sort out a personal problem or help solve a personal problem, it is very different than empathy. And so showing compassion for someone and being able to help them. And in both positive and negative things. So I'll give you an example from a positive standpoint. I had an employee a few years ago who, as part of their annual review process, I always give everyone a personal development goal for the next year. And we usually choose it together. And this person wanted to get on a nonprofit board, preferably for animals, pets. And I said, I love that idea. I don't know of an organization, but I'm going to help you do that. And we met that goal. But there I was showing compassion for something that person wanted to achieve in life that had absolutely no impact with our bottom line. But it was important to that individual. And I committed myself to helping them do that and was successful at helping them do that. They did all the work. I helped guide them.
Sure.
You know, they didn't live where I live. And but the reality was I wanted to help them achieve something that they had put on their list of things to achieve, whether it impacted us or not.
Yeah. And where does that come from for you? Where does this passion and like a deep desire for leadership, where did that originate from?
Probably originates growing up with a dad who served in the military and a mom who was very committed to her family. We have a large kind of extent. My mom came from a family of six and my dad came from a family of seven or some large number. They were both the youngest in their families. But when I was 8 years old, I got called to the principal's office. And when I got there, there was a neighbor of ours who was a police officer. And my brother was there and he said we were going home. And we learned that day that our other brother was killed in Vietnam. And the outpouring of compassion and empathy from the community was unbelievable. It was a tragedy. It happens. It was a sacrifice our family has lived with, but it definitely changed my view on life, and it certainly changed the family dynamic. It was very difficult on my dad. And my mom, I once asked her, how did you get through it? And she said, I had three more kids to raise. If I didn't focus on you three kids, we would have fallen apart. And so I get that from my mom and the community that was around us and the experiences in going through school in a very small town in northern New Jersey of like 13,000 people. But everybody had your back. And here's what's interesting about that little town. The town's called Pompton Lakes. To this day, that high school does not have locks on the lockers in the hallway. I don't know of any school that doesn't have locks on lockers in a hallway. And stuff doesn't get stolen. You may find a practical joke or two in your locker, depending on who your locker mates are. But, or how close you were to my locker, I would stick things in there. But yet we went to, you know, we had people in our school who probably stole things from stores or did different, right? But that didn't happen at school.
Right.
And so I think a lot of it comes from that upbringing.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it still 13,000 population?
It's something a lot. Yeah, there's not much more to develop in this small community.
Oh, okay. But that's pretty cool.
It actually has a very rich history. George Washington slept in that town. The cannonballs that were made for the Revolutionary War were made in that little town. And it's at the crossroads of three different rivers, but they're not really rivers as you would think, Mississippi. They're much smaller. But yes, that town is still the same.
That's very cool. Very cool. And if you could go back and give little Jim any advice, what advice would you give him?
Wow. That's a hard question. I think the advice that I would give him, Jim could have gone in a very different direction than kind of where I turned out, like any kid who has difficulty in their teenage years. But I don't know that I would do anything over again other than listen to the people around you. They know you as good as you know yourself. And there were some people that were in my life, like my school guidance counselor and a teacher in high school. You know, in the yearbook, I wanted to have a certain quote, and they wouldn't let me have it. And they called me to the counselor's office, and they broke the news that they weren't letting me have the quote. The quote was, "I am who I am, who knows and who cares." That was my attitude at the time. Yeah. They let me have, "I am who I am." Yeah. And I had to live with that. It wasn't what I wanted, but they were very emotional, physically emotional about it, that they thought that my head was in a bad spot and they weren't going to allow me to go down that pathway. And they were in tears. They literally, now the guidance counselor knew my brother, who was closest in age to me, but the teacher had actually taught my brother who died in Vietnam. And so they all put it together, and they were all like, you're in a tough spot. Your head's in a tough spot. And we don't want to see you destroy that. And I think that really, that was a dramatic moment in my life.
Yeah. It sounds like it was a moment of shift.
It was a moment of get my crap together.
Right.
Right. Right.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
It was a wake-up call, not from your parents, but it was a wake-up call from people who saw what you were going through or how you continued to suffer or whatever, and said, you know, here's a slap upside the head.
Yeah.
And it was a needed slap upside the head.
Right. Yeah. Like it's okay to, you just can't stay there. You can't stay where you are, which is beautiful. I love that. That's a beautiful community. So for leaders who are struggling today with overwhelm, with the idea that, you know, they may shrink in headcount and all the things, meeting budget, what advice do you give them? What advice would you give them to help them move in a forward direction? Just one small piece of advice that would actually help them feel better.
Understand they're not alone. Mm-hmm. And understand there's people there out there to help. One of the reasons why I like to mentor people, and the people I mentor cannot be employees of mine, direct employees of mine, is because I think everyone needs an outside voice to run ideas and conflict to, mm-hmm. to be able to help you see the forest through the trees. And so I encourage all leaders, I encourage everyone, even if you're not a leader, to have a mentor, somebody in your life that, you know, what would they do?
Yeah.
That you could, you know, chat with through situations, either work or in your personal life. Clearly, mental health is an issue in this country today, and clearly we don't do enough to solve it. But not everyone needs to go see a mental health provider, but to have somebody that they can talk to who they know, who knows them as an individual. I strongly encourage that. My life has been very impacted in a positive way by having positive mentors, mm-hmm. and people shouldn't be afraid of that. So during these difficult times, find someone that you can talk through these things with and get advice as to how they might have handled it or how they might look at it or how they might handle it.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised how willing people will be to share and to help you with it. There are times a mentor of mine will come to me and I don't know the answer. Quite honestly, I don't. I help them find the answer.
Right.
And I end up learning at the same time, which is always fun because I love to learn.
My favorite.
But I get more joy out of that. I mean, I read a lot, but when somebody challenges me like that, makes me think, I get to go down a different path that I wasn't thinking of going down.
Yeah. I love it because you get, like you said, you get to learn, and I'm a forever student. And so now we'll both know how to do this thing, you know, so that I think it's very cool. So somebody who says, okay, Jim, I'm feeling the overwhelm. I hear you about a mentor, but I don't even know where to start. Where does somebody start on how do they identify a mentor, and what do they say when they have identified a mentor?
The first thing I would do is make a list of the things you think the mentor can help you with, mm-hmm. and then create a list of people that you think fits that. And then think about how you think they can help you and prioritize your list. And then I would simply ask them if they would be willing to mentor you on the side, and get their commitment to a number of hours per month or whatever, or whether it's, if it's in a crisis, maybe a daily phone call for 15 minutes,
right.
And get that alignment and commitment, and then absolutely follow through and hold the mentor accountable. And if they can't meet, to give you alternative times and dates to meet. I was surprised the first time somebody came to me and asked me if I would be willing to mentor them. It sort of was like, you know, it's like I'm an analogy of raising kids. I give the credit to raising our kids to my wife. We have three very successful kids, all off the payroll, all off the cell phone bill. And it's all because of her. Mm-hmm. I really had a career and I was home. I never missed a birthday party. Although my middle child says I missed his 13th birthday because I wasn't there on the day of his birthday, but his party I was at. So he still holds that over my head. And he gets married in 3 weeks.
Well, that's good.
As you think about that mentorship relationship, really think about what you both can get out of it, because it mm-hmm. is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. And don't be afraid to offer help or to say to your mentor, is there anything I can help you with?
Right.
If they're going to give you their time, be willing to give your time to them as well.
Yeah.
And if you have trouble finding a mentor, reach out to me. Mm. I don't have the bandwidth right now to take on an additional person to mentor, but I can certainly help somebody
identify
in figuring out what mm-hmm. they want in a mentor or whatever. And that could be a 30-minute phone call.
Right.
And that's free of charge. Right. But I mean, I'm just helping a human being because I can.
Right.
But absolutely. I would encourage people to think of long and hard about that.
Yeah.
And to find the right person. And it's okay to have more than one.
Yeah, for sure. And to your point, like, you know, Prose was like your mentor for empathy and compassion, but there could be somebody else that you look to who's good at strategy and innovation. Right. And so I agree with all of that. And I love the fact that you said, to hold them accountable as well, because mentorship doesn't mean that they're above you in any way, right? It's just, they just have more experience in said area. And so I think, you know, holding each other accountable is definitely the key there. If how do I pose this question? Who do you recommend to pick up your book? What is the avatar look like?
There are two types of people that I think my book is perfect for. The first is someone who's considering getting into leadership mm-hmm. and not knowing what they would need to understand on day one. And then I would say the book is also for experienced leaders who feel that they have a void in understanding people and in how to manage from the people side. A lot of managers that I see today or that I mentor are book smart from a technological perspective or from a business perspective, but they lack the human element side of it.
Yeah.
And that's really where my book focuses. Because if you look at the six pillars, integrity, compassion, empathy, stability, focus, and humor, they're all interrelated with people.
Yeah.
And so it's really from the people side of it. I'm not an HR expert, so don't bring me an HR challenge, but although I probably could help you, but the reality, but it's really from that slant that my book is written. And I think people can benefit from that. And they can certainly benefit from not just the stories, but the real people in industry that I point to who have those traits.
Right. Right. I love the fact that you put humor in there. I think that's such a underrated pillar to have. Why did you choose humor?
So let me first caveat that with, I don't mean be a comedian.
I know.
There's a big difference. Humor can be used, and I use it, to diffuse tense, confrontational, or disagreements, or to kick things off, to get people to settle down, or when you're discussing a tough topic. Obviously, if you're in the middle of a funeral, you're not going to get up and crack a joke. I know people are smart enough about that, but I think that even self-deprecating humor, poking fun at I poke fun at myself all the time.
Yeah.
It shows people you're a human and that you're approachable. Yeah. Early in my management career, I had somebody tell me, people think you're unapproachable. And that hurt me. And I don't know why people felt that, but I guess because of my level of focus, people kind of got like an aura that, oh my God, he walks so fast and he's not approachable. I am the most approachable person I know. Not that I know, but I'm an extremely approachable person. Mm-hmm. But I could see how one's personality and what someone sees or reacts to is very different. So I know early in my career, I would get out of the car and I would walk into the office and probably not talk to anybody. Now, if I'm going to an office, I talk to people I don't even know.
Yeah.
And say hello to them and, you know, make sure they're having a good day. Give them a smile. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I love humor. I think work should be fun. You know, it's life is hard enough. Like, let's lighten up and let's just do what we have to do. And fun is part of it, you know. And so I love the fact that humor is in there. I feel like a lot of books don't acknowledge the fact that we want to have fun, right? They're just so serious, the leadership books, you know, because, and I understand that side too. And we're human, to your point. And so I love that. I love that a lot. What is your current favorite book other than your own?
I put it away just the other day. It's called Extreme Ownership.
Yes.
I love the book. It's Jocko. Written by some former SEALs. Mm-hmm. I love the focus on ownership. Mm-hmm. That book is all about extreme ownership and owning your responsibility, which I'm totally in favor of. Totally in favor of. And somebody recommended that book to me and said, you might enjoy this book. I couldn't put the book down. I really couldn't. Obviously, from your reaction, you've read the book.
It's a good one. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Everything falls on you.
Everything falls on you.
Everything.
And the thing that I tell people all the time, even though I'm very focused on it falls on you, it's your responsibility, but I'm here to help. Mm-hmm. But the other piece of that is I also tell people what we're doing. And no, don't mean disrespect to any provider, doctors or surgeons out there, but what I do is not open heart surgery.
Yes.
Nobody's going to die if we take 30 more minutes or 24 hours to come up with the right answer.
Yes.
Right. Or the right solution. So my teams always know, if you were to say, what's a gym-ism, they'd say it's not open heart surgery.
Right.
For certain, they would say that. That would be the first one.
I love it. And again, just bring everyone back down. Like we're not solving the world's problems here.
Correct.
So good. Correct. So good. What's your current favorite podcast?
I have to tell you, I'm on podcast overload.
Yeah.
I really am on podcast overload. I really like yours because yours strikes to the heart. Mm-hmm. And the which really is kind of when we started out and I said how aligned we are, mm-hmm. we really are very aligned, I think, in our mentality and our approach. And I'm not making that up. I'm being totally sincere.
I appreciate that.
And so when I listened to a couple of your episodes, it really struck a chord with me. It's very hard for, this is probably interview number 20 that I've done in the last 60 days with regard to the book.
All right.
I was reading something and someone said the best way to get your book and you out there is to be a guest on podcasts, which I never thought of. I was planning to spend all kinds of money on advertising, but you don't need to do that. You're leveraging audiences who, and in this case, audiences that are right in my niche of what I'm trying to reach.
Yes.
I would say you're in the top two of the ones that come quickly to mind. And I'm not just blowing smoke.
I believe you. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm on podcast. I'm probably listening to 5 podcasts or partials of them as I'm doing my, you know, what podcast might be good for my message type, review in between my day job and having a life. Right.
Okay. And so over 30 years, you've learned a lot of what to do and what not to do. What is the best piece of advice you can give anyone about anything?
Don't ever give up.
Amen.
Twofold. Don't be afraid to make mistakes and don't ever give up. Yeah. Don't ever give up trying.
I
was an athlete in high school and got into college to play sports and ultimately decided not to. And that decision not to, which was my decision, I own it, was probably a poor decision. And so when my daughter, who got the athlete gene, was in college and she played college soccer, she, in her last year, said, "Dad, my knees hurt too bad." Now, this is a girl who I worship and is more competitive than me and had 8 knee surgeries on one knee from the time she was a teenager till she got done with college. And she came to me and she said, I know if I quit, I'll break your heart. And I was like, I'm not worried about you breaking my heart. If you walk off that field, you do it on your terms, but you'll never get it back. I said, even if you don't play, your teammates need you. And she played her full senior year. Her knees still hurt her today.
Yeah.
She'll probably need that one replaced.
Yeah.
And I missed the last game she ever played in because my son was getting married and we were off on a bachelor weekend. but in the game before, it was her team finally, after 4 years, got to the conference championship. In the semifinal game, she tore a meniscus in her knee. So she wasn't going to be able to play in that last game. So when they were suiting up to travel to the university they were playing at, the coach told her, "You're suiting up today." And she says, "But I can't run and I can't kick the ball." He said, I don't care. I want you in full uniform. She said, okay. Unbeknownst to anyone, the coach had had a call with the coach of the other team. And when my daughter was a freshman, she scored the tying goal against a team that was tied for first place, which was the team they were now playing in the championship. So that coach always hugged my daughter whenever he saw her because she helped him get a championship. And the one coach talked to the other. And with 2 minutes left in the game, one of my daughter's teammates fell down on the field and nobody was around her to have hit her. And they carried her off the field and she was being carried off while laughing. And they did that just to get my daughter in the game. And the other coach, while they were getting that girl off the field, pulled his team together and said, don't touch Amanda. She's not going to touch the ball. Just stay away from her. She's injured. We're doing this for her. To see that in college athletic, right? It brings a tear to my eye even now, knowing I missed it. I have a video clip of it from somebody who did film it. To me, those two coaches, they got it. Yeah. There was more than just the score of the game.
Yeah.
They got it.
Yeah.
And I said, Amanda, you finished what you set out to do as a child. Now, my daughter in her teenage years played for a team that was ranked in the top 20 in the U.S. Of those 26 girls, only three of those girls finished playing college soccer. Only three. And I said, Amanda, you accomplished something that 23 other girls that you were teammates with couldn't do.
Right.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, that's an emotional story.
I'm sorry,
no, don't be. That was needed.
I struck home on that one, didn't I? I struck home.
That's as an athlete, I get it. Like, because how beautiful to finish first. But like you said, the coaches understood the assignment. You know, it wasn't at that moment. It wasn't about the win. It wasn't about the score. It wasn't about. It was about Amanda, and doing what was right for Amanda.
And they did it all for her.
Oh, my God, that's so beautiful. What are your final thoughts?
Now
if you have any other final thoughts.
I'm going to force my daughter to listen to this podcast. That's
yeah,
for sure.
You
that's,
should.
This you're going to have one more. You're going to have one more subscriber, and her name is Amanda Carlo.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Do you have any other final thoughts?
No. I'm a firm believer in not giving up. Look, we all are going to have bad days. Yeah. I have bad days. You have to look for the bright side of any given day.
Yeah.
And make a note of it. Don't just dwell on the negative. It'll just bring you down. Mm-hmm. You know, remember the song Tomorrow. The sun will always come out tomorrow. Well, except if you live in Seattle. Anyway, then it only comes out about 30 days a year, I think. I don't know what the number is, but the sun will come up tomorrow. We will mm-hmm. be here tomorrow. You will mm-hmm. be employed tomorrow. You will continue to do the good work that you're doing. Just stay focused on what you need to accomplish. Yeah. And then if any of us can help in any way, don't be afraid to reach out.
Don't be afraid. Yes. 100%. Couldn't end that in a better way to say, if you need the help, it's on you, but we're here. Just reach out. You know, that's beautiful, Jim. Thank you for that. Where can people find you online?
Online, I can be found on LinkedIn. I can be found on Facebook and found on Instagram. I have a website, very easy to remember. It's just Jim Carlo, no spaces in between, JimCarlough.com. They can send me an email via that. My phone number's there. They can reach out that way as well. Yeah. My book's available on my website. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and probably a few other sites as well. It's a small plug for my book.
No, yeah.
No worries.
And we'll have all the links in the show notes as well.
If you want an autographed copy, send me a note via the contact form on my website. That would be an avenue to get an autograph copy.
That's super cool. What a nice little touche there, an autographed copy of his book. Guys, you know, Jim is probably one of the first people to say that I've interviewed to say that he's open to having a 30-minute conversation to help you find that mentor. I highly encourage you to reach out to Jim, highly encourage you to grab his book if it resonates with you. Again, if you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe. Thank you all for listening. And this wraps up this episode of Leadership from the Heart. Until next time, thank you.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.